We start today's podcast by taking a fascinating look into Sufism, and you will be surprised to see what you did and didn't know about the secret Indian tradition and the ancient roots of Sufism as expounded in the Kama Sutra. This will be followed by the study of the great cosmic power Matangi, who is the divine expression of femininity, playfulness, and spontaneity. Today's meditation will be communion with Matangi, in which you can feel the divine inspiration that she offers and the arousal of Vishuddha Chakra where she subtly projects on the physical level. Your host for today will be Amaris and Tiger Lily.
Welcome to Tantra FM, a step into bliss. I'm your host, Amaris. What you don't know about Sufism. In India, it is normal that healthy women love each other and that they have sexual relationships with one another. However, this implies that they also have a male lover. Girls of high social status were raised in the company of Sakhi girls coming from poor families. These were considered and treated as sisters of the rich girl. The intimate, physical, erotic contact has always been considered as normal and healthy in all Oriental cultures. Quite often, sisters or friends used to share the same bed. Nonetheless, the term Sakhi is related to the term Shakti, which signifies the principle of the sheer vital feminine force, the primordial energy of Tantra. Having a Sakhi as a companion was vitalizing, auspicious, and different. The accepted belief is that within such a community of sisters, owing to the complex processes of resonance, the womanliness of all members, participants, becomes stronger and more accentuated. Through subtle resonance and empathy, a Sakhi would add her own qualities and experiences to those of her sister, enriching thus her inner universe. The rich women and their Sakhis were often inseparable. Moreover, when a rich woman was getting married, her Sakhis naturally became the husband's concubines, and they would assist the wife in the rituals, which were always performed with sexual continence. Within such a community of sisters, Sapphic activities were considered perfectly natural, and ancient Hindu art has illustrated this fact in many instances. Communities of sisters have evolved in time into a polygamous society. Usually, the wives and sisters would have shared a profound intimacy, and the caresses they exchanged were not considered perversions. On the contrary, they were encouraged and viewed as the expression of true and deep love and affection. Ramayana, the famous Hindu epic, contains a fragment describing in a poetic manner the Sapphic practices in a home. Countless beautiful, sensuous women were lying or sleeping on the carpets after they had spent their night making love. Their breath was perfumed because of the sweet vine. While still dreaming, some of them would turn towards their companions to taste the sweetness of their lips, as if they were the lips of the master. Their passion, once aroused, drove them to make love to one another, and afterwards they would sleep in their luxurious sheets in the arms of their lover, with the head on their bellies, breasts, thighs, or back. These charming young women, having made love to one another, would now sleep haphazardly, allowing a sweet slumber to take them over. The rich Hindu women would regularly hire a number of female servants, whose duties included, among other things, bathing, anointing, smearing, massaging, and, in short, the adornment of their mistress. This custom is still in use in contemporary India. The close relationships with the Sakis would naturally develop into sapphic relationships, especially in the case of beautiful, sensuous, and single women. The Kama Sutra offers detailed descriptions of the way women should use their mouth and tongue in order to stimulate the yoni. The same book describes the way in which sexual desires may be satisfied using certain bulbs, vegetables, or fruits whose form resembles that of the lingam. Unlike male homosexuality, which is considered sinful, sapphic love was never looked upon as a sin or as an insult in Hindu law. The miniature paintings, dating from the medieval period, often show several women caressing each other. For instance, the paintings representing Krishna and his gopis often relate the gopis in an erotic manner, that is, they are shown in passionate sensual embraces. Tantric and Buddhist literature contains a multitude of references to the extraordinary, regenerative, and transcendental power inherent in such communities of sisters. This teaching is especially underlined in the Taoist tradition. Moreover, contemporary Hinduism describes five distinct categories of sapphism. The classic form of sapphism practiced in the West is the inferior type in the Orient. In fact, it is considered a degeneration from the highly spiritual forms of sapphism, which imply continence and not the orgasm with the discharge of sexual energy. In the old times, southern India had close contacts with Egypt. India was famous for its refined silk, spices, and last but not least, for the women experts in the art of lovemaking and for the temple dancers. The ancient Egyptian laws did not forbid sapphism. Moreover, there is certain archaeological evidence that Egyptian women often had intimate relationships as well. The images from inside the Egyptian tombs show servants sensually caressing their mistresses, as well as some images from harems of a striking resemblance with the Hindu ones. What you don't know about sapphism. Jewish law also did not forbid sapphism. As for Islamic society, which has always encouraged polygamy, sapphic love was quite popular and a common practice not only inside the harem, but also outside of it. There are some traditions sustaining that Muhammad had declared sapphism an outlawed practice. However, the Arabic historian Abd al-Latif al-Baghdadi wrote in the 13th century, "The woman who has not tasted the delights of another woman's body is certainly not from our part of the world." the obvious contradiction may be explained in terms of Arabic men being afraid that the woman would gain strength. The Arabic mentality implies that the woman is a mere possession, symbolizing the man's social status, reason for which they should be kept under control rather than elevated or freed through mystical sexuality. In many of the so-called heathen cultures of the world, the intimate sexual contact between women is considered as healthy and natural. This fact is valid mostly in the matriarchal societies. Many tribes in Africa, Asia, the Pacific Islands, and South America consider Sufism as an integral part of their socio-religious system. For instance, in the African tribe Paya, belonging to the Bantu culture, a woman may lose her virginity only by having sexual relations with another woman. The latter is carefully chosen because they will become sisters afterwards and will spend together 3 days each month, during which they will practice Sufism. A similar habit exists in the Luduku tribe in Congo. The young women from New Guinea tribes are accustomed to practicing oral sex with their elderly friends, in the idea that thus they will absorb a part of the feminine wisdom and sensual charm of their more experienced friends. In China and Japan, Sufism is quite natural and common. According to the Taoist tradition, the woman has an almost inexhaustible yin energy. Moreover, the principle according to which beautiful and sensuous women may increase reciprocally their vital fluids is a basic one. In the West, the communities of women have often been misjudged and misunderstood. Recent research indicated that the great majority of Western women have had, along their lives, sapphic experiences once or several times. Nonetheless, in the West, the conviction that sapphism is a perversion continues to hold an important place. The most famous of all gay women was undoubtedly the Greek poetess Sappho. Most of her writings were destroyed in 1073 by the orders of Pope Gregory VII. Sappho lived on the island of Lesbos in the 6th century before Christ. The term lesbianism and sapphism derived directly from her reputation of loving women. According to Socrates, Sappho was a woman of dazzling beauty and incredible intelligence. Plato called her the 10th muse, and the great poet Ovid used to recommend her work to all young women. Practically, her name gained the infamous present connotation only after the affirmations of Christianity. Nonetheless, communities of women do not necessarily imply sexual relationships. Still, if such occasions arise spontaneously, the methods through which two women may reach sexual satisfaction are varied and numerous. The esoteric teachings underline the importance of kissing. Kissing is said to increase the element of water in a person. This element is usually associated with the moon, which governs the menstrual flow. The Taoist teachings insist on the importance of oral stimulation of the mouth, yoni, breasts, etc., as being an excellent means for women to amplify their feminine qualities. The Tantric and Taoist teachings share the same perspective in this respect, and even encourage sexual relationships with continence between women, but indicate also that the women should have a male lover. However, Western women attempting to explore their own sexuality should be warned that sapphic love is not an alternative to heterosexual love. Neither tantric teaching nor Taoist teaching encourages exclusive practice of sapphic love. The reason is that both traditions consider that the most important aspect is the absolute unity of the two universal principles, masculine and feminine. A sapphic relationship, or even a community of women who practice sapphism, implies a mutual true love, sexual continence, and a profound state of transfiguration and generosity. The modern woman is determined to look upon the other women as competition, rather than as friends or allies. The women of the ancient Orient knew about the true communion and feminine solidarity based on attraction and even on love. The tantric tradition has a lot to offer to modern women if they are open to understanding the profound significance of sapphic love, as well as the practical methods through which women may become emancipated in the true sense of the word, gaining thus an inner, lasting freedom. She offers divine inspiration. The tantric tradition asserts that Matangi has her subtle projection at the level of the microcosmos of the human being, at the level of Vishuddha chakra, which is the subtle plexus of speech. She's also located at the level of the tip of the tongue, where articulate speech begins and where we can perceive the essential, more or less refined, textures of food. There is a subtle energetic channel that begins at the tip of the tongue. This subtle energetic channel, or nadi, is called Sarasvati and is related to the energetic manifestation of the great cosmic power Matangi. Practically, Sarasvati nadi is a subtle nadi that facilitates the manifestation of divine inspiration at the level of the mind through speech. Matangi represents the stream of blissful subtle energy that flows through the subtle nadi, Sarasvati, conferring inspiration in the art of metaphysical poetry and verbal expression of the divine truths. Her meditation form is represented by a dark green color, similar to the color of the pure and precious emerald, a color that symbolizes the profound knowledge of the significance of the created aspects and also the essential energy of life. As we already know, green is the color of the planet Mercury, which governs the power of intelligence. Matangi must be visualized playing a Rudra Veena, which is a symbol of the power and inspiration that she offers to the sincere and devoted worshipper regarding music and all the vibrational manifestations of energy. Meditate on the wise words of the spiritual master. The beauty of Matangi is dazzling, and she wears many mysterious objects with which she fascinates and seduces her sincere worshippers. She wears the same ornaments and objects like Tripura Sundari. Sometimes she's presented holding a polychromatic parrot, which is the symbol of the power of expression through speech and nature. Matangi must be visualized in our meditations, sitting on a wonderful throne made up of precious stones. One of the most common means of worshipping Matangi, especially in India, is to exactly intone the phonemes of the Sanskrit alphabet. This represents the unmanifested subtle sound as compared to the uttered words that symbolize the differentiated manifestations of these essential divine energies in creation. A correct intonation of the phonemes of the Sanskrit alphabet can be related to the energetic petals or spokes of the main subtle four centers, chakras, of the human being, and it can fully purify, awaken, and activate them. Another efficient way in which Matangi can be worshipped is to meditate on the deep meaning of the sacred texts of spirituality, and especially on the wise words of the Guru. In time, this efficient practice will become a veritable process of meditation and even of contemplation of the teachings of the spiritual master and of the ways in which they are connected to our own life experience. She leads you to the supreme truth through art. Music is also a very efficient means of worshipping Matangi. In fact, the great cosmic power Matangi is worshipped as the main goddess of music, and consequently of musicians. A daily, deep meditation with the Bija mantra that corresponds to the sphere of Matangi confers all the powers and genial inspiration in all forms of artistic expression, and especially in music. The highest level, however, we must recognize in Matangi the mysterious meaning of the perfect silence of the Supreme Self Atman, which is in fact the veritable essence and power beyond all our thoughts and words. In other words, we must gradually understand that the great cosmic power Matangi, that manifests mostly through speech and art, divinely leads the objective, visible world, samsara, to the pure, sacred realm of divine transcendence. Hello and welcome to Tantra FM, the light that sets you free. I'm your host, Amaris. Let us perform a meditation with the following theme: communion with the great cosmic force of universal order, Matangi. In order to help our concentration and to create a better resonance with the aspect we're meditating upon, we shall use proper musical support. Sit down on a chair with your spine straight, or assume a meditation pose such as Sukhasana, Vajrasana, or Padmasana. For those of you that are still unfamiliar with these positions, you can learn about them on www.shivashakti.com. Make sure your spine, your neck, and your head are in an upward position and they form a straight line. Relax your entire body. Empty your mind and acquire a strong inner focus. Do not allow anything to disturb your concentration at this point. Start breathing deeply and rhythmically. With each inhalation, imagine that you're bringing peace and harmony into your being. Also, with each exhalation, imagine that you're eliminating all tension, stress, and anything else that might disturb you right now. Now we're ready to begin. It is time to focus our mind and meditate upon the following aspect: communion with the great cosmic force of universal order, Matangi. Let us begin. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all we have time for today. I'm Tiger Lily, wishing you love and light.